Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Welcome to another edition of the Howard Eskin podcast.
Another really what I think, and of course, you know, I will think things, and I'm a little prejudice in this regard when I talk to somebody, but I think a terrific conversation with former pitcher Jim Cott. Pitched for the Phillies, pitched for six teams in his 25-year major league career, 283 wins, and he really should, I think, be a Hall of Famer. And that vote for the with the Veterans Committee comes up in December, and he's got the possibility of being a Hall of Famer. Also talks about a player that absolutely positively, and it's a disgrace that he's not in the Hall of Fame, and that's Dick Allen. So he talks about him, but he talks about baseball and the way it was, the way it should be, what's wrong with the game today. He talks about that. Let me just touch base on the Phillies, since the Phillies acquired three relief pitchers. It's like putting lipstick on a pig. Are they better than what they have? Yes. But you get what you pay for. They gave up nothing to get these pitchers. Really gave up nothing. Three relief pitchers. One of the pitchers by the Yankees was designated for assignment, and the Yankees need relief pitchers because of injuries to their bullpen. So it makes you wonder. At least it makes me wonder just a little bit. But, you know, the Phillies are, I guess, a good team. And in the year when they have – almost it's an invitational to get to the playoffs. I mean, almost everybody makes it. 16 teams, which I think is a joke, to have 16 teams in the playoffs, really a joke. But there's a lot of things that Jim Cott says. And again, we come from an era of baseball where baseball was exciting. Baseball was fun. And he talks about what it's become. And he actually talks about what this season has become in baseball, and he didn't have, I wouldn't say he put a star on it and gave it a glowing report. But right now, let's listen to former pitcher, 283 game winner, 16 gold gloves, and that would be Jim Cott.
All right, I'm here with a man that pitched for 25 years in the big leagues, over four decades, had 283 wins, 16 gold gloves, had over 180 complete games, and even saved, I believe, 17 games in his career. And that would be a man that did play with the Phillies, was here for 4 years, and that would be Jim Cott. Kitty, how are you today?
Howard, I'm doing just fine. I mean, life could not be any better up here in Vermont, where it's peaceful and quiet. And, you know, we've been able to avoid the COVID and, so, yes, I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Yeah, and you're up for the Hall of Fame vote for the Veterans Committee in December. And obviously it's a long time waiting for it. Dick Allen, it's a crime that Dick Allen's not in the Hall of Fame yet, an absolute crime. And I'm going to ask you about Dick in a little while. But, you know, with the numbers you have, you know, it's hard to speak for yourself. And obviously you feel that you've accomplished a lot. Why do you think that you are not in the Hall of Fame yet?
Well, Howard, I'll take what I'm going to tell you from my friend, the late Phil Pepe, who you probably know is a longtime sports writer and wrote my first book with me. And Phil was on the committee. And I think that was a year I missed by one. And I said to Phil, now I know that's confidential stuff, but I said, I'm going to tell you something and you tell me if I'm right. I have a feeling there are a lot of people in there. For example, one year, David Glass, who has since passed away. David was a wonderful man, part owner of the owner of the Royals. Well, he was on the committee. He never got into baseball until 1998, so he actually never saw me play. But I think a lot of them say it took him too long to accomplish what he did. And Phil said, that's exactly right. So I said, well, you know, if my career ended after 1975, then I guess I'd be in, because I think I led the American League in wins in the 60s. And, you know, my last 8 years, they were not my best in Philadelphia. And then I became a reliever. So, you know, when they look at 25 years, they say, well, it took them too long. And it's like hitting the lottery, Howard. You have to have the right numbers. And if you look at the committees, like last year with Harold Baines, he had a couple of guys really pushing for him, Tony La Russa and Jerry Reinsdorf. I don't have that kind of support anymore from Minnesota executives or writers, because most of them are not around anymore.
Yeah, Jim, when you look at it, 25 years is an accomplishment. To pitch 25 years, it's contributions to the game are part of what are supposed to be voted on for the Hall of Fame. You know, how many pitchers, not just players, pitchers will be around for 25 years? Don't you feel that's a sense of accomplishment as well?
Well, certainly. I mean, when my career ended, that was the longest career at that time. Then Tommy John passed me by a year. And just as an aside, I think Tommy should have been in years ago, because it is a museum and it's a Hall of Fame. And who's more famous for, you know, first, you know, trying that surgery, which has become such a big part of baseball, than Tommy? And then Nolan Ryan passed him by a year. But Joel Sherman, the writer for the New York Post, made an interesting comment to me a few years ago. He said, we really should have a lifetime achievement award in the Hall of Fame. And that might be, you know, where I'd fit if I fit in. The overview that I have, like I mentioned earlier, life is good. That's not going to change my life one iota. It'll bring a little more attention to it. And if it happens, fine. I'm really pulling for Dick Allen and my teammate Tony Oliva. I think Kurt Flood should be there. I'm glad Marvin finally got in. But it's just kind of a roll of the dice as to who's on the committee.
You know, I want to get to Dick Allen shortly. But when I look back, and you look back at your career, the game is different. And it's so much different. You know, a pitcher today, if he has 9 complete games in a season, you know, they're having a national holiday. Were you over? It's the way it seems. And you pitched, over 180 complete games. Why do you think pitchers back then could pitch? I mean, Robin Roberts back in the day. Steve Carlton had, I think, 200 and some complete games. I remember pitching 11 innings in a game. It wasn't uncommon. Why is it so much different now for pitchers and pitch counts and all this other nonsense than it was in the days when you pitched in Major League Baseball?
Well, of course, my friend Bill Lee from the Red Sox competed against him for years and good friend. He said to me one day, he loves to quote Buckminster Fuller. He said, Buckminster Fuller, you know, the old philosopher, said specialization breeds extinction. And the complete game is extinct because the game has become so specialized in terms of, well, a quick example, Whitey Herzog said to me in 1982, I thought I could still start. I know I could have still started, but he said, I want you to be my lefty against lefty guy out of the bullpen. He said, I'm going to build my pitching staff from the ninth inning back. We had Bruce Sutter. We had Jeff Lottie, who had a real good slider. Doug Bear was a hard thrower. I was a lefty-lefty guy. Well, I think we only lost one game that we were leading in the seventh inning, and we ended up, of course, winning the World Series that year with a team that hit 67 home runs as a team. So Whitey saw early on that your bullpen is going to be, unless you have an elite starter, more important than your starters. This year's Phillies team would certainly be an example of that. So as Sparky Anderson started using the relief corps, then Tony La Russa has just become more and more and more specialized. And the sad thing is that the players, the ability, they are bigger, faster, stronger. They have more ability than we did. And they're actually capable of pitching nine innings more so than we were. But we were trained to pitch every 4 days, and power was not the top priority. It was getting outs, changing speeds, having control, and now the game is just throw as hard as you can, and if you don't get it over, you get hit, we'll find somebody else that can throw just as hard.
You know, when you look at the game, and I know you still do some games for the MLB Network, and so you still obviously see the game, involved in the game. What do you like and dislike about the game today? I mean, strikeouts, you strike out, no big deal. Not the pitcher, the hitter, no big deal. It's home runs, walks, and it seems like strikeouts, and that's what the game is. What do you like and dislike about the game today?
Well, unfortunately, my likes would not be as many as my dislikes, but I'd say when I see a guy like Nolan Arenado play third base, and I played with Schmitty, and you, of course, know Schmitty very well, and he was as great an athletic player as I ever played with, and you see the athletic ability of some of the players today, like Mookie Betts and now this Fernando Tatis Jr. I enjoy seeing the ability because I flash back even a great catch like Willie Mays made back in the 50s. The famous catch in the Polo Grounds. Well, that stood out then because there weren't any other center fielders with the athleticism that Willie Mays had. Well, now, you have a lot of them, starting with when Gary Maddox was with the Phillies. So, you know, the athletic ability is off the chart. What I don't like is the fundamental skills that are so lacking, and I blame management for that. I know that Whitey Herzog, Tom Kelly, who managed the Twins, they wouldn't tolerate it. The base running is terrible. The fundamental, you know, slide into third base with two out, make the third out at third. There's, you know, Pete Rose, who you know as well, too. Pete, I told Pete, if you went to a tryout camp today, Scooter, which was his nickname, I said they'd send you home the first day. You couldn't run. You didn't have a strong arm. You had no power. You had no range. So they're saying, how could this guy be a great baseball player? Well, he had a high baseball IQ. You know, he did the fundamental things right. He had great instincts. And those are the things that are lacking today. And then you couple that with the ball is obviously either made better or it's livelier because I don't know how many games you see, but when I see a guy reach for an outside pitch and hit it over the right field wall, I said, that's just not right. So, ownership, and I think MLB, they love the home run. So, as you said, almost 40% of the at-bats are walks, strikeouts, or home runs. And at some point last year, I watched a Red Sox game, and it was almost 8 minutes before a ball was put in play, between balls in play. So that's what I miss. I just wish with all the athleticism that the players today had that they'd forget about the weight rooms, we wouldn't have so many injuries, and play the game that it was designed to play, you know, as a nice sunny afternoon game where you'd see guys do the fundamental things, and if a home run was hit, wow, that was special. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Well, analytics, and I'm talking with Jim Cott. I think analytics, these guys that just look at a computer And we all remember Dallas Green and Paul Owens. The eye test. Dallas would always tell me the eye test. And it's rare that that the baseball people that make these decisions on players use the eye test, not even enough, but they use the computers and a lot of times ignore the eye test. Do you find that to be a problem as well?
Well, I do. Now, I think they, you know, analytics, maybe they have a part in the game, but like Bill Parcells, who's a good friend of mine, great football coach, he said, we had what they call analytics years ago, but we call them statistics. You know, coach knew, hey, if I give up 100 yards, this is my chances of winning, and he had all these different formulas. What I think the analytics have done is taken away the intuitive skills of the player, turn them into robots, plus every player, as every person, feels different every day. You know, you get up some days, wow, you think you could lick the world. Other days, you're kind of dragging. So your fastball might not be as good today as it was 4 days ago. So they don't really factor in the human part of it that I think is so lacking in the game. And I wish that, quite frankly, even though a lot of these things have created jobs and there's sponsorship items on TV, I wish things like StatCast and analytics and metrics and all those things had never come along. I really think the game would be a lot better for it.
You know, you were a pitcher, so you would be happy to see it nowadays. Do you think the game misses the stolen base and the guys going from first and third? And stolen base is like, well, that doesn't work in analytics. How much do you think the game misses that excitement in the game?
Well, you know, I'm probably talking to fans that are of my era, though I do talk to my grandkids, and they don't really – they won't watch a game. They'll watch the highlight shows, you know, which kids do today. They won't watch a 3.5-4 hour game. But, you know, I mentioned the other day on TV, in fact, it was in a Phillies game, and I said, you know, Dick Grote won the MVP in 1960, and he had 2 home runs. He was a hit-and-run machine. Guy get on first, hit and run, now he got first and third, changes the infield, changes whole strategy of the game. Yes, I think it misses that. We don't see any triples anymore. But in my age group, I miss that stuff. But in fairness to the young kids that are playing Fortnite and not playing Sandlot baseball, it's the way they grew up. You know, it's the only game they know. So unless we change that and train them differently, it's going to continue to be this type of a game.
You know, the game, you're right, there's no hit and run anymore either. All right, you had 4 years with the Phillies. Of your 25 years, 4 of them were here in Philadelphia in some really good years, 76, 77, 78, and then 79, that's when Pete Rose came. So what do you remember about your years with the Phillies?
Well, first of all, I remember those 3 years. The 77 team, I think Timmy McCarver and I talk often about it, is ability-wise the best team I was ever on, with Schmitty and Bull and Gary Maddox and Bake, and I could go on and on. We had a good bullpen. We had power. I think Davey Johnson hit a couple of grand slam pinch hit home runs. We had everything. And, you know, Danny was a nice guy. We got along with him good. He was easy to play for. But I really think if we had Whitey Herzog managing those teams, because Whitey was a master game manager at matching up the bullpen, and he just seemed to be 2 or 3 moves ahead of things. I think we maybe could have gone all the way one of those years. But, you know, we won 100 games every all 3 full years that I was with. I was there just a little bit in 79, and, of course, got a chance to know Pete then, and then went on to coach for him. But, yeah, those 3 years with the Phillies I wish personally I would have done better. I know when Paul Owens got me from the White Sox, Chuck Tanner said, now, you have to pitch this guy every 4 days, even every 3 days if you need him, because the more he pitches, the more effective he'll be with his control. I come off a year where I pitched 300 innings. So now Danny calls me in one day and said, well, we're going to skip you against Montreal, and you're not going to pitch for like 8 more days. And I said, why is that? He said, well, they have a lot of right-hand hitters. They got Wallach, Carter, Ellen, Dawson, blah, blah, blah. So I paused for a minute, and I'm going over the math in my head. And I said, well, Danny, I think I faced about 10,000 right-hand hitters in my career. I had to get some of them out, you know. So But that's kind of the way he operated, and I was never as effective a pitcher. And then he used me to pinch run out of the blue one day in St. Louis, and I slid into third and cracked my kneecap. That was about August of 76, and that kind of ended my season there. But despite the fact I didn't have a lot of individual success, I really enjoyed being on those teams and still stay in touch with a lot of the guys like Timmy McCarver and Schmitty and Tommy Hutton.
Yeah, and all good guys, and Schmitty, the best third baseman that ever played the game, so you can't dispute that. When Pete came over, and you said, and obviously you weren't here a full year in Philadelphia with the Phillies in 79, but could you see that Pete could turn, obviously Danny Ozark not being there and Dallas Green being the manager kind of changed things, but how much did Pete Rose kind of, from what you saw when you were here, start to change the mentality of the Phillies baseball team back then?
Well, I think because Pete was on those successful teams in Cincinnati. And, you know, in my years with the Phillies, we really didn't have a player. I mean, Timmy would voice his opinion, but we didn't really have a player that would be a model as far as how to play the game. I don't mean the other guys couldn't play the game, but Schmitty was one of those, Pete was one of those guys, like he called Mike Herbie. That was Mike's nickname because Pete said, well, you look like a Herbie. But Pete was one of those guys that could, when you got back to the dugout, he could say, you could have been on second base on that play, and things like that, that I think kind of motivated every other player to be better than they were before Pete got there, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. Could Danny Ozark have won a World Series here, or was he just too passive a manager?
Well, I think he could have. I think, you know, there's such a small margin sometimes between winning and losing. Think of the playoff game when he opted not to put Jerry Martin in left field and left Bull in there, and we had the Dodgers beat with two out, nobody on.
77.
Yeah, and that would have sent us to the World Series. You know, once you get to the World Series, it's not always the best team. It's who happens to be playing the best at that time. But when you got a guy like Lefty as your ace that you can run out there, I would have felt pretty good about us winning a World Series. And then actually in Cincinnati in 76, I mean, I hadn't pitched a game in a month, and all of a sudden Danny came up to me and said, I can't start Underwood or LC, you know, young kids in game three, we're down two. He said, I'm going to start you. So we're flying to Cincinnati and we have a workout the next day, and then I'm pitching game three. So I had pitched, so I went out to shortstop, and I must have fielded 100 ground balls and thrown them over to first base just to get my arm stretched out. So lo and behold, I shut him out for six innings. And then he came out, he said, well, I'm going to bring in Reed because Foster's a hitter. And I said, Danny, you know, Foster's a great fastball hitter. I can throw those little sloppy curves up there, but he wouldn't let me talk him into it. Boom, Foster hits a three-run homer. So my point is we had the Reds down in all three of those games, and we just never were able to close it out with the bullpen. And we had a good bullpen. Granted, they were a great team, but during the season, we beat them 7 out of 12. So we were certainly capable of winning that series.
Jim, the best player in your 25 years that you saw, and you obviously were in the era of Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, and certainly Dick Allen, I want to get to him. Who was the best player that you, and it's probably hard to identify one, that you saw when you played in baseball? And maybe the best player that you think in baseball, it's hard to identify one guy. But
well, yeah, if you want to count the years that I announced as well, you know, along okay. came Ken Griffey Jr., I don't think you could play the game ever any better than he did, you know, for as many years as he did. I've always said that Schmitty was the greatest all-around athletic third baseman that I ever played with. Now, I mentioned Nolan Arenado. When you look at his numbers and see his plays, I mean, I think even Schmitty would be in awe of some of the plays that this guy makes. So that gives you an idea of how much better the players today are physically. Dick was always one of my favorites. Dick Allen, we played together. I'll give you a quick story. Dick learned to play the game from Gene Mock, as you know. So he did everything in the game, not just hit for average and hit for power. He ran the bases. So I'm pitching against Nolan Ryan, and Nolan is striking everybody out. We don't have a hit. I give up a home run to Frank Robinson in the second inning, and now I get the last out of the ninth. We're down 1-0. We don't have a hit yet. We're trotting off the field. Dick's playing first base. He pats me on the backside. He said, old-timer, which was my nickname because I was the oldest guy on the team. He says, old-timer, we're going to win this game. So Dick, with one out, hit a routine two-hopper to third. Rudy Mioli kind of looked at the ball for a second. Pew, Dick beats it out. Next guy on a hit and run, which they don't do anymore, they bobble the ball. First and third, the end result is we get one hit and a sacrifice fly, and we win the game 2-1. If Dick doesn't hustle out that ground ball, we don't even score a run or get a hit, I think. But that's the kind of influence that he could have on the game besides his prodigious power.
How good, you know, there's numbers for a five-year period where he was better than Mays, better than Aaron. And obviously, I think we both agree, if he doesn't get in this vote in December and in the Hall of Fame, it's a disgrace. How great a player was Dick Allen?
Well, in 72, now I joined the White Sox in 73, but in 72, I was playing against him. And you know, the White Sox, we nicknamed him Mose, as in Moses, who led the White Sox out of the wilderness. You know, they drew 400,000 people, I think, in 71. They weren't going anywhere. And he won the MVP in 72, and he was literally a one-man show and almost took them all the way to the, you know, at least to the division playoffs. But he was at what I would say one of the last legendary players that I saw. You know, guys would come in the dugout in Chicago before the game. They'd look out center field, the wind would be blowing in, and somebody say, well, nobody's hitting one out of here today. And you know, Dick in that famous pose with his hard hat, sitting on the bench smoking a cigarette, he'd look at me, wink at me, get up there with his 42-ounce bat and just drive it right through the wind. Yeah, he had that kind of you know, he just was so much fun as a teammate to be around because he loved to play the game the right way, and he loved to see guys who did play the game the right way.
Hey, Jim, I saw him hit it over the roof at Connie Mack Stadium when I was a kid. It was just amazing the power that he had. He hit it out of the ballpark. When you say, how the hell did he hit it out of the ballpark?
Yeah. He was like you know, Bo Jackson, I think if Bo had stayed healthy, would have been the greatest baseball player of his era. But Dick was like Bo Jackson with baseball skills. You know, Bo was primarily a football player, but Dick was built like a football player. You know, it'd be 95 degrees in St. Louis, and he'd have a long-sleeved sweatshirt on. I said, Dick, it's 95 degrees out. What are you doing a long-sleeved sweatshirt? He said, old-timer, I don't want to show him the ammunition. So he had these forearms and biceps, you know, like Mike Tyson. So, and he could run. He could feel better than people gave him credit for. You know, I first saw him when I faced him actually in the 66 All-Star game, but Dick was Rookie of the Year, I think, in 64. And then to play with him for those few years in Chicago and then in Philadelphia, I really even though he was on the downside of his career those last years in Philly, I really appreciated the greatness of his all-around ability.
Let's talk about this year's Phillies, this Phillies team now. How do you view this team? And obviously, we know there's a really big weakness. How do you look at this year's Phillies team?
Well, they're typical in terms of they have a good lineup. You know, they've got a lot of high-profile players. Romuto's having a great year, going to be a high-priced free agent. Hoskins isn't doing that well yet, but he's still capable. Harper does more things than people give him credit for. So that being said, they're right near or at the top of the National League in runs scored. But like every other team, they don't have a bullpen that can hold the lead. And there we go to back our early part of our conversation when the pitchers aren't trained to go nine innings. Zach Wheeler and an Aaron Nola are capable of pitching nine innings. But it's kind of a waste when you send a guy like that to the mound and he gives you seven good innings and then the bullpen doesn't hold it. Well, that's just a waste. You know, years ago as a starter, you took pride in staying in that game until they either tied it or went ahead. You owned the game, and you didn't want to leave it in anybody else's hands. And I think if some teams would go back to that, the Phillies would be a good example with those two top-line starters they have. They'd be better off. But unfortunately, that's their weakness. And I know in talking to Joe Girardi, he said I have some they're missing David Robertson, and I think it's Sir Anthony still on yep. He's not going to pitch this year. So they're a little short-sighted there, but, you know, bullpens all around baseball, other than you look at the teams near the top, they're just real thin in the bullpen. The Phillies are probably at the top of that list.
Jim, I believe you had 232 career hits. And now it looks like there's not only a DH this year, but it looks like it's going to be in both leagues. And you played with both in the American League and without the DH in the National League. As a pitcher, I guess the first part of this question is how much did you enjoy to hit? And do you think having a DH takes away from the maneuverability and that a manager has to have and takes away from the game? Do you like it or dislike it?
Well, I dislike it. I always have. When it came in 73, our first thought was, well, this is going to cost a lot of pitchers time in the big leagues. We didn't need 10 pitchers. You know, like seven pitchers really did most of your pitching, maybe eight. Wilbur pitched 300 innings in Chicago. I pitched 300 innings. You know, so your relievers, when it was tied in the sixth or seventh inning, you know, starters stayed in, which selfishly, you know, I had two 20-game seasons there in Chicago, and I think with the DH, that probably put a couple wins on my ledger because I didn't come out of the game for a pinch hitter. But when I learned to play the game, the object was I want to be a baseball player that just happens to be a pitcher. You want to be able to run the bases. You want to be able to bunt. You want to be able to handle a bat. And you want to be able to field your position. So if I'm a better fielder, hitter, base runner, then the pitcher on the other team, like Johnny Sain used to say to me, well, if you can be responsible for one run a game, the other team has to get two to be ahead of you. And, you know, then people come along now and say, well, it's boring to watch the pitcher hit. Well, sure, because they don't get to hit in the little league. They never develop their talent. I mean, you look at a lot of today's big league players, they were probably the best pitcher on their high school team, but they also could hit, so they turned into position players. So I know everybody likes the home run, and to see the pitcher hit these days is boring because very few of them are good hitters, but I miss that part of the game. I just think that was a big part of the game for me because if I could be better at those things than the other guy, I had an advantage.
I always thought, too, it was good for the fans to think, all right, the pitcher's coming up in this inning. Is the manager going to go to a pinch hitter? Is he going to keep him in? It just gives the fans something to think about and obviously talk about. And it just the manager doesn't become a robot. Because with a DH, if the guy's pitching well, you just leave him in there. Do you think it takes away from that part of the game, too?
Well, I think it does. I mean, I think that, and again, I'm talking about fans probably in my era. I don't know if young fans, first of all, they're probably texting during half of the at-bats, except when the home run hitters come up. So, you know, and they got all the music going. Whereas, you know, when we went to the game, my dad took me to our first games in 1946, Red Sox and Tigers, and then you were just glued to every move they made on the field, along with what you're saying. Is the pitcher going to bunt? Is this guy going to hit and run? And now there is none of that to get the fans' attention. They just sit back, and it's kind of like watching a nine-inning home run derby.
Yeah, it's just, well, you did a lot of things well, and that's field your position. Now, you had 16 gold gloves, and I saw it written somewhere, and this is hard to believe in today's world when players get things just given to them all the time. Did you use the same glove for 15 seasons?
I did. I have it about 15 feet away from me right here. It was one of the original Wilson A2000s, and trainers used to tape it up and, you know, sew it up because it's kind of like an old pair of jeans or something like that that's so comfortable. And the cool thing about the fielding part was when I was a kid growing up in Michigan, on a Sunday afternoon, I could listen to 8 games. Every team played a doubleheader. So it was the Cubs, the White Sox, the Tigers, and then the Braves had just moved to Milwaukee. So when Bobby Shantz, who was with the Phillies, he won the MVP in 52, went 24-7. When he pitched against the White Sox, Bob Elson would describe his motion. He'd say, here's little Bobby Shantz, he's 5'7", best fielding pitcher in the game, finishes square to the hitter, all of those kinds of things. So I'd go out in my backyard, throw the ball off the back of my garage, and I would imagine I was Bobby Shantz. So now I get to spring training in 58. We go through the pitcher's drills, and about 2 times through, the coach said to me, hey, kid, you look just like Bobby Shantz. Well, the neat thing was at the Rawlings Gold Glove Dinner, I think this is 3 years ago now, Rawlings called me and said, we're thinking about giving an award to some of the original Gold Glove winners, and Bobby Shantz was one of those. So they said, do you know Bobby Shantz? I said, do I know Bobby Shantz? My boyhood hero. So they get Bobby to come to the banquet, and I give him, I've got pictures of it on my wall right here with a nice autographed picture from him. I give him a legacy award, and I told the audience that night when I was presenting it to him, I was 80, Bobby was 93. I think he's going to be 95, and his next birthday still lives up there in Dublin. I said, how often does an 80-year-old get to give an award to his boyhood hero who was 93? So that was a real thrill for me.
Well, it was fun, obviously, watching you play the game. The game is different. I don't like 7 innings in these doubleheaders. Is this season, and that just goes to whatever you call this season, is this season a legitimate baseball season?
I think it's more like an exhibition season. I mean, I know there are some great performances out there like this Fernando Tatis Jr., but you know, now we have another game postponed this weekend, Yankees-Mets, because of the COVID. And we're probably going to have more. So you got one team's played 23 games, another team's played like 12. Yeah, I think at the end of the season, this is just one where I don't even care if they keep records, you know, and they just say, look, the guys got to play, the fans got to watch some games on TV, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's a different game, and the game before was a better baseball game. That's when baseball was baseball. I don't know if it's baseball these days. But with all that said, December could be big for you. It has to be big for Dick Allen, or it's a disgrace, the Hall of Fame. It's just there's no way that Dick Allen should not be in the Hall of Fame. So I wish you luck, and obviously I want to see Dick Allen get in there. He was kind of my boyhood idols too, just watching him play the game. But guys that played the game, I'll use the term that the basketball coach Larry Brown used to always use, played the game the right way. And
yep,
I don't think enough players do that in today's game, in every sport. Not every sport, in a lot of sports. They don't play the game the right way, but you did, and Dick Allen did. And I talked to Chip Carey this week, and Chip says, he compared you to Whitey Ford. He says, Whitey Ford has 236 wins. You have 283. He says, Jim Cott has got to be in the Hall of Fame. For people that don't know, Chip Carey's the Braves announcer, so I'm sure you see him periodically when you're going around. He said he's got to be in the Hall of Fame. So I wish you the best. I wish you luck. Hopefully I see you down the road, but you won't be in the ballpark this year if you're doing a Phillies game. Yeah. You'll be doing it from the studio. But, Jim, it's so great to talk to you. Maybe one of these days if I'm down in Florida in the winter and I go to see Schmitty or Billy Cunningham or any of those people, I'll get a chance to see you again. And I really do appreciate your time. And really, great guy, a terrific baseball player, 25 years over four decades, and I wish you the best of luck. I really do.
Thank you so much, Howard. I enjoyed the visit.
Yeah, I enjoyed it even more. So, okay. Thanks. Hey, take care. Take care of Vermont for me, will you?
Very interesting guy, in my opinion. Very interesting. Baseball's like an exhibition season. They miss the base running. They miss the stolen bases. They miss the hit and run. They miss the first to third. I love the point where he said it was over 8 minutes where a ball was put in play in a game that he was doing. Over 8 minutes. It really is a nine-inning home run hitting contest. It's not the same. Not only are the balls juiced up, the bats are juiced up, the ballparks are smaller. It's not the same game, but at least you should be able to play the game the way it was meant to be played. And they don't play baseball now the way it's meant to be played. It's just that's why kids, there's not enough action. It's exciting to see a player try to steal a base. Nobody will ever break those records of 100 stolen bases. I mean, it's ridiculous to think about that because analytics, which has really screwed up the game, and most of the people in the front offices don't have the ability to have an eye test for players. It's to them, it's not about the eye test. It's about what the computer says. And I think from that standpoint, it's really, really kind of ridiculous. Really kind of ridiculous. So I thought it was interesting, fascinating what he said. And I'm rooting for he and especially Dick Allen to make the Hall of Fame. And Dick Allen for sure belongs. It doesn't seem like Jim Cott is that upset if he doesn't make it, but it would add something to what he does. And it's about, you know, what he's brought to the game, the contributions to the game, and certainly he did that. And some people who don't even have a point of reference or a good point of reference. And with the Veterans Committee, they should have more, but there's a prejudice involved there too. So hopefully you enjoyed it. We'll be back again for another edition of the Howard Eskin podcast. Again, I hope you enjoyed it.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.